This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 4, Episode 19. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
02088 167 691,
and you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway and Berners. And it's a slightly unusual podcast this week in that, strangely enough, the three of us were actually physically together yesterday, and we managed somehow to avoid recording the podcast, and now we're doing it as normal over Skype. So that's a strange feeling.
Yeah, it is a bit, but it was a busy day yesterday, mate, wasn't it? So, yeah, it was tough to get everything in that we wanted, but we got the main stuff done.
It was, yeah. Berners and I came to the school to see you in action, Garraz, and somebody else who, if you're a follower of Pitch Vision Academy, you'll pretty easily work out who it was. So that's a little challenge for all our listeners. And first time I've been to school, and it's very exciting facilities you've got there.
Yeah, they're good, mate. It's a decent place to be, and lots of scope for developing young people, which is good, not just in sport, but also as a school itself as well. So, no, it's all going well, and we generally get all of the top-notch things to work with. So I'm actually looking over the ground that you're on, and the scoreboard that developed a malfunction last week is now being replaced, so things don't take long to move on here.
And, Berners, you enjoyed your visit to the bubble?
I did. It was good. It's always a hot affair, but yeah, it's great, revolutionary, and I think it was. It would be great if you could get a grass wicket in that kind of thing as well. It's probably quite hard because I guess grass won't grow in there. But as old Banger said, you'd probably have a lot of counties wanting to come down there for pre-season if you could have such a good facility with a grass track in it. It'd be outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be a challenge, obviously, but I'm sure it wouldn't be insurmountable. And a bit of research, and I'm sure that our guys will be able to do it. Obviously, we have to weigh up the initial costs and the benefits and all of that sort of thing. But it was a good idea and one that I'll definitely take forward.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the IPL, because there's been an article this week on Crick Info, a few stats, and we like our stats on this show. And I'll link to that article in the show notes. But the highlights of it really are all to do with how IPL tactics have changed slightly this season. The first six overs, people have not been going for it as much, especially over six, which has been a trend in previous IPLs. The last over of that six-over power play was an attacking over, much more attacking over than it has been this season. And there's been much less of a drop-off as a result into the middle overs. But they've been making up for it in the death, because the last four overs have been the most productive of any IPL. So, Garraz, is this a trend in 2020, do you think?
I don't know about 2020, because I think it all varies depending on where you're playing it, mate, to be honest. And but what I do know is that a couple of years ago, I put together some stuff for a couple of franchises which highlighted a trend that was going to develop, and I'm pleased to see that Crick Info have caught on to that trend. So that was good. And the trend that was beginning to develop, and all the indicators from a statistical perspective were glowing red, was that the key thing, and they haven't really highlighted it in this document, to be honest, this thing online, but the key thing is taking wickets into the last six overs. So taking wickets in hand into the last six overs, because the every time you lose a wicket in that middle period, which obviously gives you a greater wicket tally in the last six overs, limits your scoring significantly. And when I say significantly, what you get in the first six overs in the power play, you won't make up. So if you, for example, take in four wickets, you're four down going into the last six, there's an incredibly high chance that you are going to score at a massively accelerated rate. Whereas if you go into the last six down, then it's pretty much impossible to get a match win in total. So obviously that has an effect on how you go about your power play. So yeah, it's all about wickets going into those last six. And it's a bit of an old-fashioned way, but as we know in stats, things are very cyclical. And that's the way that sides are beginning to twig onto it, and it was good to see Rajasthan Royals, who had this information 2 years ago, using it really well in their campaign to date. But that's the way it is. If you can take 4 wickets into the last 6, you make hay, mate, and that's been played out in the stats that Crick Info have come in with.
Bernice, do you approve of this? Is it the traditional way of start a little bit slower and keep wickets in hand for you, or are you a more of a Jayasuriya character?
I think you should build it, have structure. If you've got players that can play down the order, then yeah, that you know that you've got some ammunition. So I like to keep a few trump cards. Obviously, the ball becomes a little bit easier to hit, and also people become fatigued, especially in the amateur game. I find like those latter scoring times in the, I'd say the last 20, I think, are always a lot easier than the first 20 because everyone's quite buoyant in the ring. Normally the teams have one or two good bowlers that are quite fresh and up for it, but once you get to that end kind of third, yeah, you can really take advantage. And if you've and you need men in the shed, don't you, to be able to do that, because you are going to lose a few stragglers along the way. But yeah, interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, it's all about working out the value of a wicket, really, isn't it? I think, you know, I mean, you can't put a number run on it, but if you know that the value of a wicket is the greater the longer that you can stay in. So I mean, it makes sense to start slower.
But it's only marginally slower, isn't it?
I mean, we're not talking
about going to blocking here. We're talking about, on average, across a 54-match tournament, we're talking about, you know, three quarters of a run per over, or even a third of a run per over, rather than, you know, the listeners out there would think, okay, well, it's all right for us to be 10 for no wicket at the end of 6. Well, obviously that isn't the case. That's not what we're advocating. All we're saying here is that, you know, the accelerator hasn't been pressed quite as much as it would have been previously, and with a very tactical and strategic image in your head of where you're going to take your innings over the course of the 20 overs, and in particular into those last 6, so you can make hay. So we're not talking about all or nothing, which often in club cricket it is, and certainly at amateur levels that I watch now, and even at the school level here, one of the challenges that I have is to keep the scoreboard ticking over, even if you are losing wickets. And it's something that has taken a while to ingrain within the kids playing longer format cricket, or even 2020 cricket. But we're not talking about all or nothing. We're talking about an accumulation of runs, but maybe going, you know, a third or a quarter or a half of a run per over, which doesn't sound very much, but actually, if it protects you a wicket, which you can take in the last 6, it's going to make a massive dividend when it comes to striking the ball at the end of the innings.
Yeah, that's right. I guess at club level, school level, that kind of thing, where conditions, and you can set up a situation where, you know, you can set a ring field, a tight ring field, and try and strangle the single scoring. And then it's difficult, especially on when the batting is a little bit difficult and the outfield maybe grass is a little bit longer than you hoped it would be, or the ball's not getting through the gaps, then that makes it very difficult to rotate the strike. And you have to get clever then, don't you?
You certainly do. That's absolutely, absolutely right.
But what do you do when you've got that, you've got that ring of fielders and you can't penetrate the gaps?
I normally go dancing down the wicket and get stumped, but what I should do is stay committed to the crease for starters. And I always try to hit straight past the bowler, because I think however tight mid-off and mid-on are, there's always options straight down the ground. You hit it back past the stumps, or you can get it through mid-off if he's up quite tight and you hit it hard and straight. You can always get through there. And then, of course, you've got the option to go over the top if you can get your body position in the right way and use your levers nicely, you know, because you don't necessarily need fantastic contact. You just need to make sure that you get there more than anything to nudge it over the infield. And then, you know, you're not talking about hitting a boundary. You might just get 2 or 3, but they're then going to probably drop one out and you've got a nice little pocket to pick up one, or you've got their captain thinking. But yes, when they're nicely settled in the ring, it does get quite hard. I always find it hard when it's a spinner or someone doing a little bit with it, moving it off the seam or bowling little dobbers. And there's more impetus on you doing something rather than them making a mistake. It's more all on the batsman. So I think that's a great thing that we do at Ealing, is we've got certain bowlers where we can really squeeze the opposition. And even if a guy's on, say, 60 or 70 and he's well set, we'll really put some pressure on him and make him have to make all the moves, so to speak. So we're saying, go on then, you try and do something different here, because we're going to stay as we are, which you're thinking on a Saturday afternoon, again, I keep going back to amateur cricket, is very valuable. And you find the teams that win probably don't have the bowling ability or someone who can hold down an end quite as some of the teams that are successful do. So, you know, you've got guys that will bowl a couple of loose balls, which don't permit you to keep those fielders in that kind of attacking prominent position.
Yeah, that's right. That's really important. Yeah, there's no tactic that will survive if your bowlers can't put the ball in the right place, is there? Okay, let's finish up this section with the yes-no round. Of course, every week, three questions come from Berners and three answers come from me and Gareth. But we can only say yes or no, no matter how much more we want to discuss it. So, Berners, what are the three questions this week?
First question, are bowling machines good training tools?
Yes.
Yes.
Second question, when the bowler hits the non-striking end stumps with his body, his foot or his hand, should it be classified a no ball?
No.
Yes.
Third question, is Dhoni the greatest finisher ever to play the game of cricket?
No.
Yes.
Right, so we're going to dip into the mailbag at this point in the show. We've got a couple of questions, and they're both to do with fast bowling this week. So, Berners, you've got those questions there. And, of course, the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So let's go through the questions and see which one Gareth chooses at the end of the show.
Well, for the style of question and the name of the asker, it's quite amusing. But Mouseman has come to the stage, and he's asking, what type of muscles do fast bowlers use, and what exercises can be done to improve these muscles? Well, any that involve eating cheese, I guess, Mouseman.
Mouseman, yeah, exactly. Yeah, makes me think that he needs to bulk up a bit, perhaps, if he's the size of a mouse. But it's an interesting question, actually, because I would applaud that kind of question, because it's a question that perhaps not every bowler would automatically ask. So well done there. But also, it's a question where I would say, well, let's look at it from another angle, because it's not really about muscles, although it is about muscles. It's a bit like saying, how should I train my fingers to get better at catching? Well, yeah, your fingers are involved in catching, but you wouldn't train each finger individually to get better at catching. You'd train your whole hand, or both hands together, in fact, is what you'd train. So it's really a matter of thinking about movements rather than muscles, and that's kind of the key to thinking about the way that you train. Pushing and pulling, upper body pushing, upper body pulling, and lower body pushing. And lower body pulling is the exercises. If you do those four movements, then you're pretty much covering off everything that you can think of. There are better and worse exercises. There are exercises you can do on one leg, using one arm, which are more beneficial. So you've got a wide range of options. But if you stick to that idea of push and pull, and then make sure that you cover off the core as well, because the core is an important aspect as well, then you've got a good basic template for a training program for a fast bowler.
I would add to that, and something that we do with our fast bowlers within the ECB programs is push, pulls, core and legs. Because the legs obviously play a huge role in a fast bowler, because they have to absorb the ground forces and then transfer the ground forces up through the body into momentum that makes the ball go down the other end at pace. So the starting point is that contact with the ground, and legs are really important. So lunges and squats, even without weight to start off with, are really useful. Doing some anterior lunges as well helps to increase the stability, lateral lunges. But if you lunge and squat yourself to death, you're not going to go too far wrong as a fast bowler. And then, as David said, you know, your pushes, your pulls, and your core become incredibly important as well, because you're looking for stability through the core, which will again help the transfer of momentum going up through the body into the ball, as well as helping from an injury prevention perspective.
Yeah, that's a great basic thing, and then you can get into more detail. There's especially some interesting stuff around the shoulders, which does get quite complicated sometimes because the shoulder is quite a complicated joint. But yeah, if you stick to the basics of pushing and pulling, then you'll be ahead of the game anyway. Deadlifts are also an excellent exercise because that's training the posterior train. You can do single and double leg deadlifts, and rowing. When we're talking about upper body pulling, rowing is really good for shoulder health. When we're talking about fast bowlers, which is an area which things can go wrong quite easily with the shoulders, so make sure. What a lot of people miss out when they do training is they like to do the pushing type stuff, the press ups, or the bench pressing and that kind of thing, which is good, but you don't want to miss out the pulling exercises as well. And there are many people who recommend that you do a lot more pulling than you do pushing, purely because you're not really. It's not as easy to do pulling. So if you do more, if you double up on the pulling, then your shoulder's going to be a lot more healthy. I think that's a good general principle to have. And as you say, Gareth, you don't need to have access to a weight room with lots of weights in it. You can do this kind of thing very simple with body weight type exercises to start with. Ideally, you want to get strong, and getting strong will mean at some point using some kind of external resistance in some way, but don't see that as a barrier. If you just want to start, then it's far better to pick a range of exercises that you can do, bodyweight exercises that you can do, chin-ups, press-ups, lunges, squats, single-leg deadlifts, things like that. You don't need any external resistance at all. You can just use your own body weight and get on with it. Get on with it, get something done. And start by doing it today and then carry on doing it for the rest of your life.
I'll tell you what else is really useful as well, and it's becoming more and more prevalent within the international game and nowadays, is the use of like FitKit Pro or a TRX system, mm-hmm. which you can suspend onto a door, for example, and use your own body weight in a variety of different angles to replicate a number of the exercises that you would normally need a machine or weights to do. And the benefit of using those, particularly for fast bowlers, is that you work the full range of the muscle, which means that it ends up being long and lean rather than sometimes with weights, particularly when we overload in terms of weights, we can get quite short and very our muscles then become really quite short in length, which isn't what we're looking for from a fast bowler perspective. We need some flexibility throughout that muscle as well as it being strong. So, yeah, TRX and FitKit Pro have been two really good things that I've come across in the last few years, and it's something that goes around with me and we work at, within our squads quite a lot because it keeps that length in the muscle, which is absolutely essential.
I couldn't agree with you more about the TRX style of equipment, and because they're so convenient. You know, they're small, they're light, you can just carry them around anywhere. They're very simple to take around with you. You don't need to carry a bunch of dumbbells around with you. I know that Stefan Jones, of course, a friend of the podcast, did used to carry dumbbells around with him in his cricket kit. That might be a bit excessive for most people, but something like a TRX, you're using your body weight, but you're using your body weight in ways that you can't do if you didn't have it, particularly in those pulling type of exercises. So that's a great thing. I would slightly disagree with you on the use of the language long and lean muscles. I know what you're saying. You want to be strong and mobile. You want to be an athlete. You want to be leopard-like. You don't want to be like a great big bodybuilder. But maybe I would slightly disagree, because muscle length is a fixed thing. It's your muscles attached to your bone.
I agree with that. But the range that somebody can move there.
The range.
That's what I'm talking about there. I'm not suggesting for a minute that you detach your muscle and put it somewhere else. I'm purely talking about the range of movement, and range of movement for fast bowlers is absolutely essential. So being very anecdotal, Having played a bit of cricket with a guy called Malcolm Marshall, one of his real assets as a fast bowler was his flexibility, and he was incredibly strong. But it, from my memory, I can't remember him going anywhere near any dumbbells. And he basically just used to stretch himself and throw balls around and make sure that he had good range of movement and flexibility in his shoulders in particular, which tend to propel the ball down the other end. So I'm referring to length of the range as opposed to the actual length of the muscle.
Yes, yeah, length, a range of movement around the joint, which is, you know, some mobility, flexibility, those kind of phrases, absolutely essential. And what can happen is if you concentrate, I completely agree with this, Gareth, if you concentrate too much on building strength, then that can affect your range of motion around the shoulders, around the hips, which is very, very, very important areas. Ankles as well, very important to be mobile. So I think we're agreeing with each other. Maybe just the terminology is slightly different. But yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. The phrase which is sort of flying around at the moment in these worlds is supple leopard, which I just love that, because that sums it up for me. You know, you want to be strong, you want to be fast, you want to be agile, you know, you want to be able to produce that kind of athletic performance on the field, and that is a combination of lots of different training types. So yeah, don't just think popping to the gym and doing some doing a bench press is going to be enough. You need to stretch, you need to mobilize, and you need to be ready to fire when you go out onto the field.
Next question comes in from Brett, and he's saying he's got a very talented 11-year-old bowler that he's coaching currently at school and representative level. He's saying that he bowls with good pace and excellent line and length on a consistent basis. However, he's noticed a potential flaw in his action that could create issues for him as he moves through the levels. He's obviously a younger player. And he's got a lot of potential. He bowls with a front-on action with both hips and shoulders, so little risk of injury there. However, his running style is such that he runs on the balls of his feet and at delivery stride lands on the balls of his front foot without his heel ever landing in the crease. So what he's noticed is that this means that he's regularly at risk of not only bowling no balls because of the way he lands, but also, you know, more importantly, injuring himself. So he's saying, as a coach, what would we look to change? His running style so that he's landing on his heel, or take the simpler approach of adjusting his run-up so that his foot is now landing behind the crease? His only concern that changing his running style might well lose, you know, the dynamics of what he's built up, so his pace and the natural spring and the ability that he's got at the moment. So he wants a bit of an expert opinion on whether to bring him back behind the crease or to totally change his running style.
Yeah, well, I'm going to admit something straight away. I wouldn't know where to start to change someone's running style that dramatically. So my immediate reaction would be, yeah, just get him to take go a little bit back. It's not going to make any difference to his overall pace. So go a little bit back. But then that's kind of a bit of a cop-out. So, Gareth, what do you think?
Well, I do actually agree. I wouldn't go anywhere near changing his running style, because that running style was developed from the moment he took his first step through to this point now. So to try and undo that would A, be very difficult to do, and B, the instance of injury, because your foot mechanics in particular, which you're talking about here, are the reason why you don't get injured, because you're used to going through your different ranges of movement for taking the forces that walking and running by landing the way you do. You've trained your body to do that. So if we were to get it different by using the heel to land in your run-up and then your heel to land in your delivery stride, then we'll put the instance of injury quite significantly through the roof. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It's about changing the run-up. The only slight thing that I would add to this is it would be interesting to see your upper body mechanics through from the time that you jump in order to bow to the delivery into your delivery stride, and then also your front foot land on the crease or just in front of a white line, as it sounds like you are at the moment, to see how you land in there, because there is a lot of research now that shows with fast bowlers only. But if you can land heel first and then go through the range of movement on your front on your front foot, then you'll be absorbing the force of the ground forces coming up through the body so much better than if you land on the front half of your foot and your toe, which it sounds like you are at the moment. There's a good chance that your front knee will be bending through your bowling action rather than being in a strong position to absorb the force and even brace over the top of that front leg. So that's something that we could work on. But in terms of your running style, just keep your run as it is. Remark your run up. Really work hard on it so you can take that out of the equation when you're standing at the end of your mark. But that's not something that you need to worry about. And then it would be really interesting to get some footage or to get a coach to look at the bowler through some super slow motion, just to see what the upper body mechanics are, because a lot of people who bowl and land on their front foot don't stretch towards the bowler before pulling their front arm in. Stretch towards the batter before pulling their front arm in. And that's hugely important, because that front arm will help you to go forward rather than just up. And it will take everything going towards the bowler. And as you pull in, you again pull the body over the top of the front leg. And that's where the extreme pace comes from. So it'll be interesting to see that on a video clip.
At the age of 11, would it be possible to change the running style? I mean, sprinters spend a lot of time working on sprinting technique from very young, and they can adjust sprinting technique over a long period of time. In theory, would it be possible if you had the right kind of coach?
In theory, it would be possible that you could change it. Whether you'd be changing it for the better or not is very, very, I'd say that's blooming difficult, mate, to be brutally honest with you. As things develop, there is a way that your foot should land that gives you the best chance of running fast is going out the window, because we're seeing different types of foot landers being very good at 100 metres. So, for example, the two guys out of Jamaica at the moment that are smashing all the world records in Blake and Bolt both land completely differently.
Yeah, that's right.
Whereas a few years ago, everybody would have said you need to land in this way if you're going to be a sprinter. Well, you know, those two are trained by the same coach, operate out of the same club, do all, you know, and yet they land slightly different and are still able to be number one and two in the world. So the reason being is because the way that Bolt lands is exactly the way that he's developed his foot mechanics over the years. Mm. And equally, you know, the same things apply to Blake. They just happen to be different foot mechanics. So I wouldn't go anywhere near that. If it's good enough for those two in terms of running style, then it's good enough for any bowler that's running in. Just go with what you do. Don't try and change that. There are other things that are much easier to change and much more beneficial for a bowler in terms of injury prevention and performance and looking at that.
That's right. Yeah, if you did decide to embark on it, then that would be a massive task in itself, wouldn't it? And you don't even know what the end result is. It's soapbox time, and climbing on this week is Berners. He only has a minute, but he blatantly disregards that. So, Berners, over to you. 60 seconds.
I'm sticking tight to my 60 this week. It's all about respect and etiquette to the officials. As we all know, in sport, there are people that govern the game. In cricket, it's no different. And there are two guys that give up their time and also know what they're doing and have to actually be quite opinionated in their views on certain aspects of the game, which is the nature of cricket. Obviously, sometimes you get decisions that go against you, some that go for you. That's what cricket's all about. That's why we play it. If you didn't have those controversial moments, we wouldn't have anything to talk about in the bar. What I've noticed lately, especially in the amateur game, because that's pretty much the only place I'm ever going to play the game these days, is that the respect for these officials seems to have gone out the window. A lot of people back chatting, giving the officials jip, and also when certain things are or decisions are made during the game, almost having a viewpoint which is, you know, disregarding the fact that you've even got umpires. So listen to the umpires, their word's final. Get on with it and enjoy your cricket.
All right, so after that rant from Berners, which was well within time, of course, with respect to the officials, it's time for us to be on our way. But before we go, We just need to decide who the winner of this week's competition is. So we had two bowling questions. Mouse Man's question about muscles and Brett's question about running style in a young bowler. So, Gareth, which one did you prefer to win the prize this week?
I like the simplicity of Mouse Man's question, which allowed us then to go real deep into the push-pulls, core and leg stuff, which hopefully will help a few guys out there, both as players and as coaches of players. So Mouse Man wins it this week.
Well, congratulations, Mouse Man. You win a prize in online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And there's a couple of fitness courses on there, so, and one specifically for fast bowlers, so you may want to take a little look at that. Now, Berners, if someone wanted to send in a question to the show and have a chance of winning a prize, what would they need to do?
They can give us a quick call. The number is 02088 167691, or they can drop us an email, and our address is coach@pitchvision.com.
Yes, it is. We're on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can see some videos on there, some exciting videos and photos on there, as well as being able to post your questions and get some answers. And you can also find us on Twitter at PV Cricket Coach. So make sure you give us a follow on there. If you want to subscribe to this show and listen to it every week when it comes out on a Friday, then you can do. Just head over to iTunes, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and click on the subscribe button. And while you're there, why not leave a 5-star review for us? If you don't want to listen to the show in iTunes, then you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link and follow the instructions for subscribing to the RSS feed, which is what we use. That's all for this week. So until next time, we'll see you next week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Berners.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, boys.